You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. Good afternoon, and welcome to UTalk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. May 2nd to 8th is Mental Health Week for the Canadian Mental Health Association. In any given year, one in five Canadians experiences a mental illness. By the time Canadians reach 40 years of age, one in two have or have had a mental illness. The pandemic has only increased the challenges people face with mental health. There are services and programs available if you or someone you're close to is struggling. And we have the Mood Disorders Association of Manitoba to talk to us about that.
Thank you, first of all, for the invitation. I'm delighted to be here. I'm Rita Chahal. I'm the Executive Director of Mood Disorders Association of Manitoba. Mood Disorders is a charitable organization, been around for about 40 plus years, very grassroots. Really, we focus on mood disorders and various other co-occurring mental health issues. And at the end of the day, we are a peer support organization, which really focuses on helping people help themselves. So we are not involved in clinical intervention. However, we are part of that clinical and medical supports that people who might be suffering from mental illness or other mental health issues, we are part of the support system. So as an example, I see things in threes. So when somebody is diagnosed with a mental illness, they have their primary healthcare provider looking after them. With medications, the therapy, all of those aspects. Then there's the family support that one needs very directly to continue that treatment or support along the way. And then there's the third aspect, which is community and your employers and your other networks. So we are part of that additional support system to help guide people. Often after release from a hospital or after some an incident or a traumatic event or having new diagnosis, those kinds of things. So we are very much a peer support. I would say that I think we're well suited for that type of support because a majority of our staff, as well as our board members, have either lived or shared experience. So they've dealt with mood or mental health illness or mood disorder on their own or on a family member or a friend or somebody in their life might have had that. So that experience gives us that additional ability to provide peer support to somebody who needs it or asks for it.
Having these supports is so important. And I think for many people going through this 2-year-long pandemic and, it's still lingering here, people are learning about the struggles of mental health. People who have never had challenges or were not aware of challenges, are now like myself. I never suffered from depression before, but this whole pandemic has really brought to light the importance of support and having these conversations around mental health. So that kind of leads into my next question about, why is it important to have a Mental Health Awareness Week?
All of the things that you've just mentioned are absolutely true. That's what's happened, particularly in the last couple of years. To answer the last part, why is it important to have a week? I think it puts some attention on a topic that has or an issue that has often been stigmatized. Many people weren't even aware, myself included, that there was actually a Mental Health Week. Much more aware of it now. Now that I'm in the sector, I think it's not something that you just dedicate a week to and then forget about it. Often there are, so many other issues that we all have dedicated a month for or a day for or a week for, but these are ongoing issues in our lives. I believe that mental health and your mental well-being is as equally, if not more, important than your physical health. So let's look at the last couple of years. We focused very much at the beginning of COVID on our physical well-being. We started to, talk about, to protect yourself, the masking, the physical distancing, all of those elements. But we slowly realized the impact that this was having on our emotional well-being. When we were isolated, you couldn't go out anywhere, you couldn't talk to people, you couldn't be at work, you couldn't do the thing. Families having to multitask and have kids at home and caregiving, all of those are things that are impacting. Sometimes we may not even have recognized that we might have had predetermined, you know, mental health issues. But all of this started to come out into the light in the last couple of years. And of course, mental health has always been, or mental illness, a very stigmatized topic in all communities, in all sectors. But I think what the absolute one important aspect, or the silver lining that has come out of the pandemic, is the conversations, as you say, that have begun about talking about mental well-being and mental health. So I think, you know, when governments are paying much more attention to it, employers, individuals, communities, we're all taking charge of that. We're talking, we're having conversations. I still believe that it's still very much a stigmatized area. There's a lot of work that has to be done in it. Working in, with the ethnocultural communities, within the ethnocultural communities, very much mental health and mental well-being and mental illness are very stigmatized still. And there is a lot of work to do in those communities. But overall, there is a real shift in the openness that we now talk, and we're not scared to talk about it. We're not scared to say, you know what, I'm feeling some anxiety today, or I've been really sad and depressed, or boy, did I feel isolated for those 2 weeks when I had to self-isolate. Boy, did that have an impact on me. So it's things that we may have taken for granted even are now the awareness that's going on around it. And we are providing education, and we are all doing things like advocacy. Certainly mood disorders, part of our mandate is to provide that advocacy and education and information to our communities. So that's why it's important. But it shouldn't be just a week-long event. It should be a daily event to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. That is something that I'm learning, having conversations with people who have, mental health challenges, and they go through these hurdles either daily or, you know, sometimes it slows down for a little bit and you don't notice it for a while, but then it has a flare.
Those are the things that I've learned in the last couple of years. And also recognizing that somebody might be struggling, but they might be afraid to ask, but not be scared to offer them something. I mean, you have to be sensitive about it, obviously, but don't be afraid to offer some help to somebody who might need it.
Be a friend who's open. Like, you don't have to like be like, oh, I see you're struggling with this. You don't have to be direct about it. You can just...
This year's theme, for example, Mental Health Week, is called Get Real About How to Help. And you can learn how to help. You can take organizations like ours do help people provide that, help provide information of how you can connect with somebody, how somebody might be struggling with thoughts of suicide, how you can intervene and help that individual get out of that immediate danger that they might be in, and help them put a plan together on a road to recovery. You can help them, direct them with other professional services, like a hospital or a clinic or some other organization that might be better suited for what their need is at the time.
Within my own circles, seeing the shift in rhetoric and conversations around mental health and mental illness, that it's something that you deal with, but it's not something that defines you.
Absolutely not.
How would you like to see the conversation around mental health and mental illness continue to evolve?
We need to continue talking. I think we need to destigmatize the topic and not be afraid to talk about it. I also think there needs to be more investments, both financial and human, in this area. You know, it is a very challenging area to work in, because somebody might be having their own issues, but also trying to be helpful working in a sector. So I think governments and decision makers and private sector as well, community all over, should be investing in ways, and not just sometimes money, but other supports as well. The need to have dialogue, the need to have collaborative events, the need to. I think sometimes people become too territorial, especially when it impacts the funding of an organization. I truly believe in sisterhood and working together with your sister organizations to do what you do best and work together, referral system to each other. So that's very much my MO in terms of providing leadership in any organization that I've worked with.
What are some of the main concerns facing mental health and mental illness here today in Manitoba and Canada, and beyond increasing dialogue and conversations and those, you know, collaborative networks between sister organizations? How can we improve mental health and mental illness for Manitobans and Canadians?
I don't have all of the statistics in front of me, but anecdotally, we do know that probably 1 in 5 Canadians do suffer from some form of mental illness or mental health issue. And so I think recognizing that it's not something that is so isolated is important. I think the fact that the overused word about pivoted to online presence has definitely opened some doors, but I'm not sure that we've invested enough in the infrastructure, especially in rural communities, in rural Manitoba, where people are also struggling, but they don't necessarily have access to technology because of, you know, the infrastructure. So I think there needs to be investments in those. I think we need to be having more collaborative discussions on issues and just more general information, publication, and of course, research. We are going to really start to feel the impact of mental health, not just today and tomorrow, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Look at the children that were born during COVID babies. I know I have 2 granddaughters that were born during COVID. And the way that traditionally how babies are, you know, first born and family supports and things, they missed out on those because families couldn't get together. Now, what's the impact of that going to be when they get to school age or the relationships that they build? You know, I'll take my own example. I didn't see my grandchildren, the COVID babies, for 6-7 months while after they were born, and they only saw me through a screen, and so they got to know me through. So when I first saw them in person, it was strange for them because they only saw me, and they would try to touch me through the screen or give me hugs and kisses through the screen or on phone. So those are all things that we haven't sort of seen the impact of those kind of interaction and the impact of technology, both good and the challenges that were associated with it for a number of years. So I think those are some of the areas that we're going to have to invest in. Research is going to be an important part. The long-term impacts of some of the medications that people are doing. Addictions was another area that people haven't paid a lot of attention to. The addictions and substance abuse overall increased during COVID.
You're so easy to slip.
Yeah, and so you're biased. Whatever the reasons, I'm not justifying or making judgments on any of that. Whatever the reasons, but it certainly climbed up. What supports do we have in place to help support those dealing with addictions and co-occurring mental illnesses? Things like spousal abuse, domestic violence were all impacted during COVID. So they were increasing. What kind of supports do we have in place? So those are, and also, you know, in general, homelessness and providing food security and loss of jobs, the impact that had on people. These are very serious issues. Some of those basic things have to still be looked at. And we can't just move from this normal that we had for 2 years into a new normal all of a sudden and hope things will go back to being normalized. We will all have to adjust and adapt and not be afraid of asking for help. To me, that is one of the key things, that if you're struggling with something, then it's important to make sure that we are doing what we can.
Talking about addictions, it's been so hard for me to fight off my like soda, my love for soda. Oh, first
first I was, I feel I was addicted to energy drinks. I couldn't go through a day without having one. Finally, I've been able to get off of there, but now it's soda's the thing I'm trying to kick as well.
When we pick up addictions, we don't just need to think about substance abuse and drugs and alcohol. There's other things that people, you know, or the traditional addictions that we talk about, gambling and online stuff, things like that. But there were things like you just mentioned, addictions to different foods, people's body images, their images themselves. Disordered eating has been a big factor, and that's something that we're working with a lot these days, is disordered eating and body image, and in particular with youth. We're doing a lot of work with the schools, certainly here in Winnipeg, but now also in rural Manitoba, where there's a lot of requests for us doing work with kids who are dealing with their own issues because of the impact of, but body image is a big one. They're spending so much more time on the screen following celebrities and thinking that's what the world is really like, and the reality is. And
social media is great, but you know, we're starting to learn about the long-term consequences of it on developing minds.
Absolutely. So, you know, those are things that I think that we'll all be paying attention to in the month and years to come. We're doing a lot of work on body image and disordered eating. That's one of our biggest programs. And that's new. That's something new. We have a wonderful program for youth called our Mad Camp, which is music, art, and dance. So that's what we call a Mad Camp. And it is about young people between the ages of 12 and 17 dealing with their mental illness, mental health issues through a creativity, through expression through music, art, and dance. These are 2-week camps that we offer at Mood Disorders, where they get pick a stream, if it's music, art, or dance, and then, you know, they'll work through different activities, a very holistic approach, making sure that they have exercise and good eating and healthy exercise and field trips and access to guest speakers, cultural activities. It's very well planned out. It's one of my favorite programs that we've ever done. And then we do a showcase for parents and invited guests and funders at the end of the camp, of each session. And so we go through about 80 kids. We offer it to about 80 kids in the summer, July and August.
When I was a youth, I definitely would have benefited from programs like that. Because growing up, yeah, there were no conversations really about mental health. Or if you were struggling with something, you would be bullied or made fun of. So, you know, you internalize that and then you lash out at people. I know I had a lot of internalized anger.
Some of the things that the kids are right now dealing with, of course, are depression, anxiety, isolation, and many of these are related to you know, working with the schools, the impact of the schools being able to having to work from home, etc. But they also talk about bullying and transgender issues and violence in the home. So there's so many co-occurring things that are impacting their lives. So to have a safe space that they can come and share their concerns and get some support. And in some cases, you know, what we were able to do is we were able to put them in the right direction, connect them with other professional resources that they might have needed. We've certainly worked with kids that were autistic. So we made a special accommodation to work with a child in the camp and they just loved it. That the parents couldn't say that they've never ever been able to send their child to a camp, and by having this, and it was just a wonderful experience for all of the kids in the program. We've dealt with the kids coming through and building enough rapport and trust with us to be able to share abuse situations that might have occurred or might be occurring. So that's led to some obviously some safety interventions and other other interventions that are necessary to protect the children. So it's a great program. So that's one that we're very proud of. Of course, we have our very one of our most important programs is the Women's Mental Health Program, which is supported by Shoppers Love You Program. And the Run for Women is coming up in June. So please go to runforwomen.ca and register and sign. And all of the funds raised for the run in Manitoba go to support women's mental health with mood disorders. Shoppers does this with 18 communities across the country, and in Manitoba, we're the organization of choice for them. We've just launched an incredible men's program. We're working with gyms to help men who might be struggling with mental health to access our services, and vice versa, because as you know, movement and physical well-being is equally important, and the two go hand in hand with mental illness. So that's one aspect. And then we're within that program, we also have a woodworking group. Men will often not seek out direct support. However, when they're engaged in and we know this anecdotally, engaged in an activity that they can talk to their peers or talk to somebody else, it comes out and they're able to get that support. So there's a woodworking group that we have. Well, they'll be creating different projects, a doghouse, a squirrel table, a storage bin, which we can use to donate back to the community or use them as fundraisers. So again, we haven't figured that part, but we're partnering with North Forge to get that program started.
Oh, very cool.
It's very exciting. And then, of course, we have our staff across the province in all the regions of Manitoba. So each region has their own specific needs, and so they do a program for their particular program. As an example, Westman does a lot of. They do this men's activity group as one. They do a program called Soul Sisters. They do Cut the Clutter, and just a whole host of other programs. So each section, each area. Looks at the need of the organization of the community and offers. We have a representative at Selkirk Hospital right now that provides once a week. Somebody is there, so somebody might be getting discharged, or somebody just needs to go in and talk to somebody. We have somebody there as well. So some good things happening and new things. We're relaunching our in person. In fact, last night we had our open house for the summer. What are the programs that we are offering in person, in addition to our online offerings as well? And then in September we'll do an official launch of all of our programs, and a formal launch of our new website. So do watch for our website.
That's absolutely amazing. The work that the Mood Disorders Association is doing here in Manitoba. So needed. It's so great. If I'm struggling with mental health, or I know someone who's struggling, what steps should I be taking, or what actions can I take?
Well, first of all, a great question. For yourself, do not be afraid to ask for help. No one's going to make judgment on you. There are some great organizations out there, Mood Disorders Association included, that have the resources, the professionally trained staff to be able to support you. So walk in if you need to, phone, check the website, ask someone if they know. So do not be afraid to ask. And about helping somebody else, again, don't be afraid to offer them support. That's a little bit trickier because you know that somebody might get offended, but you have to, again, do it in a caring, compassionate way. You might have to use some phrases and say, you know what, I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but I've noticed, you've been a little bit not yourself lately. Is there something I can do to help? Is there something you need? And if the person says, no, I don't want to know, that's fine. You need to respect their privacy and their, but keep an eye on them. Just make sure. Sometimes people just are at that stage where they just might be thinking about something that we don't want them to walk down that path. All of our staff are trained in suicide intervention, and we've certainly had a need to help intervene when somebody might be thinking about that. I'm happy to say that we've helped save some lives. But at that stage, you want to make sure that the individual gets additional clinical and other supports that are needed to get them to a journey of wellness. You know, at the end of the day, each of us, if you look at a scale, there's illness and there's wellness. And at no point are you completely ill or you're completely well. We all keep going on the scale back and forth. And one day we might be closer to the illness, and one day we're much more closer to the wellness. The idea is to try and keep a balance. And so nobody knows you better than you know yourself. So you have to be able to look inside and say, you know what, I need some help today. And it's okay not to be always... You don't have to be on a high all the time to feel good about it. It's okay to stay in bed for a day because you just can't do that. I've done it, and I don't apologize for it anymore. You can't be a superwoman. You can't be a superman and constantly try to do everything. It's okay. Your body tells you what you need. Your mind tells you what you need. So ask for help. So that would be my advice.
Where can people go to find out more information about the Mood Disorders Association of Manitoba? And are there ways that people can support the association?
You can go onto our website, Google us on Mood Disorders Association of Manitoba.ca, and it'll take you there. And so there are a lot of resources that are available. But our new website is going to have a lot more information. And in terms of resource and the way it's going to be built, the way it's being built is that, hopefully it will be a one-stop shop, but it also directs you into areas that if you need additional support. We provide one-on-one peer. If you're having a difficult time during the day, you can call us. Our phone lines are open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. No, Monday to Sunday, 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We have staff and volunteers. A big part of our model is working with volunteers. So we have some incredibly great volunteers who answer our phones, provide one-on-one support that help facilitate the peer support groups with our staff online as well as in person. And how can you support us? You can support us by engaging in our programs, registering for them. Sharing that information with others. We always, of course, are looking for financial support. With the pandemic, a lot of our fundraising has been curtailed, especially our third-party fundraising. So we're always very appreciative to all Manitobans and our community for the financial support that we get from individuals, from organizations, from government, places like United Way and Winnipeg Foundation are big supporters, but we also have corporate spots. But it's the person who makes the difference by giving $5 or $10 or just providing some in-kind support. Those are equally important. So we ask for that, and we are grateful, and thank you for that support. And then, of course, getting the word out, like what you're doing today. Having these opportunities to engage with the communities.
I pledge my devotion to a meaningful life. To love in slow motion, to bathe in the bright light. Rivers in the evening, mystified by morning. And I don't know how long we have, so it's gotta be right.
The past few years have seen an explosion of diversity in the film industry. Films featuring diverse creators, stories, and cultures. What if I told you there are creators from the Asian diaspora creating movies here in Manitoba? Starting May 13th, the Fascination Film Festival showcases films in Winnipeg and Calgary made by creators in Manitoba, across Canada, and the United States.
Hi, I'm Alan Wong. I'm the president of the Fascination Film Festival and also the executive director of the Gimli International Film Festival. And I'm also the president of ACTRA Manitoba. So those are my three hats that I wear.
So you must be very interested in film then.
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, I've worked in film for probably about almost 20 years, I would say. And about 20 years. And started off as an actor and obviously loved movies growing up. And yeah, so it's always been a goal of mine to work in the industry. And so here I am.
And we're going to be talking a little bit about, Asian films and, the festival here. Another quick question, just what is your favorite film of all time? Just something that's like just your comfort movie.
Oh, man, that's a good question. Well, I always have new favorites, right? Because new stories come out, and I'm always a fan of things that make you think and feel, stories that inspire you, that are also like touch you in certain ways, like that are poignant or something like that, but also entertaining, right? So. I'm a huge fan of like all the superhero movies that are coming out now because I grew up on comic books. And so that's a huge deal for me to see all of my childhood come to life, basically. Right. But I actually just watched Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it's fantastic. I'd say it's definitely my favorite movie that I've seen this year so far. And I've seen a lot of good movies this year. So
that's like the multidimensional movie, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, written and directed by Daniels, and stars Michelle Yeoh and Ki Yu Kwan, I didn't realize this until I saw the film, but he's the actor from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom that played Short Round.
No way. Yeah, small world.
So everybody's like, you're always wondering, whatever happened to that kid, right? And now we know.
That's a good one. That's one I really want to see. I'm actually going to see The Northman.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I heard good things about that.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Willem Dafoe is, you know, he's up there with some of my favorites, like him and Robert Pattinson in The Lighthouse. That was good.
Yeah, The Lighthouse, that was a pretty crazy movie. You know, it's so dark, and Robert Eggers, he's got a style, you know, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really a fan of these kind of like gritty art films that have kind of been coming out. They're just a lot of fun, very different. But yes, Marvel movies are also a really good experience. Currently going through Moon Knight when the episodes come out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the spectrum, right? But you have like independent stories that are independent movies that are, you know, a little bit edgier, a little more off the wall, you know. And then you have the very commercial, like studio backed films that are just like, you know, meant to be like crowd pleasers, right? You don't maybe get as much like you know, experimentation or you know, different perspectives with those movies, but they are entertaining, and they are meant to sort of like inspire and but then on the flip side, you know, stuff like Everything Everywhere All at Once is actually produced by the two brothers the Russos, who did a lot of the Avengers movies. So it's executive produced by the Russos, and you can definitely tell it's got a bit of that superhero-esque type of mentality behind it. But it's just a unique way of telling the story of the multiverses and yeah, anyways, I can go on all day, exactly. And I've been thinking about this movie for the past couple of days because I just saw it on Sunday. And so like it's been firmly entrenched in my mind for the past couple of days. And so like that's a sign of a good movie, right? When it stays with you afterwards and you like can't stop thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So
and it's really exciting to see a lot of movies getting recognition that are like Asian led, like, you know, everywhere all can't say the title correctly, but like Parasite a couple years ago, you got Shang-Chi. That was revolutionary. People were like, no, an Asian lead can't be like a main superhero in the Marvel series. It's like, well, I think they can, but it's really cool. Yeah, and that kind of feeds into the Fascination Asian Film Festival, like celebrating Asian films. So what can you tell me about this festival?
This is not necessarily celebrating films in the Asian cinematic landscape, because there are lots of those. Like China's got a huge movie market now. India's got a huge movie market. Korea's got a huge movie market. But this is actually more focusing on the talents and contributions and work of Asians in Canada and in the United States, because a lot of their stories are very... there's a lot of correlations. So it's more about the diaspora, right? So like Asians living outside of Asia, obviously. And, you know, growing up as an Asian guy in Canada, you know, I've experienced a lot of sort of things that are very, you know, cultural things that are unique to my experience, right? And that can be said with anybody, you know, who is, I guess, really... You can say that about any minority culture in Canada or the United States. You know, they've got they've always got one foot in one culture and the other foot in the mainstream culture here. And so we really want to, you know, just showcase and celebrate the work of our local industry, because there's a lot of Asian filmmakers here, actually. As you know, Winnipeg has a huge Filipino population. And so there's quite a lot of Filipino films, Filipino-centered stories, and that's fantastic. And we can all relate. And it's part of Asian Heritage Month as well, right? Because May is Asian Heritage Month. And so we're just wanting to celebrate Asian stories.
Oh, that's so awesome. Yeah, speaking of Asian stories told here in Manitoba, I can't quite remember the title of it right now, but it was about a Mennonite guy and a Filipino girl getting together here in Manitoba. I can't quite remember the title, but yeah, that was super fun.
Actually, I know the director, Sean Garrity, and the movie's name was, I think, I Propose We Never See Each Other Again After Tonight.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah, I saw it in its early stages, and it was a really interesting concept, because a lot of that movie was also improvised. So there wasn't really a script. It was just more like scene directions, and then the actors were allowed to just kind of like ad-lib their lines, right? And so that was an interesting process.
It's just really funny because it's kind of very similar to my life. I'm dating someone who's Filipino. I come from a Mennonite background, actually, Winkler. Although it's like very close to Morden, so it was pretty fun.
There's a lot of interesting things about the Filipino culture. You know, I've been learning more and more about it because I've got a few Filipino friends, and the more Filipino, like, especially working on Fascin Asian and through the Asian Heritage Society, you know, I've made more Filipino friends over the years, and stuff about their culture is fantastic, and I love the food, and you know. There's such a great diversity in food in all the Asian cultures, right? But some similarities as well. A lot of rice
is pretty good.
Well, that's true. I mean, like, rice is universal.
Exactly.
That's the next movie that I'm going to make, call it Rice is Universal.
Ooh, all right. There you go. There was a call for submissions earlier this year. How was engagement for that?
Pretty decent. We got a good batch of submissions, and you know, unfortunately, you can't. We wish we could play them all, but we can't, right? So, unfortunately, we had to select. We have a total of 18 films, short films, that we selected out of the short films that were submitted, and then we also programmed four feature-length films, and those are from the from Canada and the US, so two of each, and yeah, so we're excited to show them, and we've launched the website with all the lists, all the films, and so you can check out the program anytime at fascination.ca.
What sort of variety are we looking at in terms of just the stories or the mediums or the types of devices that people are using to record this? Because like you can have people that's recording on like a DSLR or just a handycam or like on their phone, and it can tell very different stories depending on the sort of device that you're using.
Yeah, I mean, for the short films, definitely there's a variety of different kind of looks. So there's so much more variety in the short films. Some of them are animated. Some of them are almost like little documentaries that are like shot with, it seems like a camcorder or like a phone or phone camera or something like that. And then some of them are like super professional and they look like they could be feature films, right? So it runs the gamut of, I don't know, styles and visual appeal.
Do you want this wide variety? Because if everything just had the same look, the same filters all the time, it'd be boring. It's fun to just see how people, you know, tackle a film project. Is the event going to be in person this year, or is it going to be online?
We are doing an in-person event this year. It's going to be mostly held at Cinematheque downtown. And, you know, we're doing a concurrent festival in Calgary as well. And that festival will be held at their new Central Public Library, which is a beautiful space. And so they've got us beat when it comes to capacity. Their theater holds 300, whereas ours only holds 85. But we are also offering our films online as well. So you will be able to check out, if you can't come to the theater or you don't feel comfortable yet being in the theater or, you know, around a lot of people, then you're more than welcome to. People can just check it out online and watch the movies at home.
That must be pretty exciting to be able to hold an in-person event again, though.
Yeah, yeah. We've been slowly getting out there. We did something, Gimli did something for National Canadian Film Day last week. And so we had an event there. We also sponsored the premiere of Islands, which is playing at Cinematheque right now. Speaking of Filipino movies, that's a fantastic one. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's still playing at Cinematheque right now. It's playing multiple shows. And we had one of the actresses, the main lead actress, that plays opposite the main lead guy. We had her come down for a live Q&A session with the director, and the director zoomed in from New York. And so it was really cool to get that that hybrid virtual and in-person engagement. And it really, like, the technology now is great that it really, you can do it without really any lag at all. Like, there's no problems at all, like with him zooming in and us being able to have a conversation with him and then her at the same time in the theater. So that's something that we're planning on doing actually for both Winnipeg and Calgary, is so that any Q&A that we do, the filmmakers, whether they be in LA or Toronto or Vancouver, they can zoom in, and both theaters in Winnipeg and Calgary will be able to participate in those Q&As.
There was not a lot of good that happened during these pandemics, but the one good thing is, you know, our virtual communications, our capabilities, because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you, like, back in the day, you'd watch some interviews from in the studio and someone would talk and they would just be, oh, yes.
Yes.
What were some, like, other challenges that, you know, setting up this festival had during the pandemic?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, like, we actually planned on doing this first in 2020 and obviously had to cancel because it was this, like, March, you know, shut everything down, April shut everything down. And we're like, okay, I guess we're not doing this because we don't know when it's going to be over, right? And then last year, we ended up getting a grant that would help to solidify the festival and really, like, help us get it going. And so we were able to do a virtual festival last year with on a virtual platform with the help of Cinematheque. Actually, we kind of piggybacked off of their virtual platform, and then we set up so that we would stream basically all of our Q&As and live events. We just stream them to our social media channels, so Facebook and YouTube, and it really worked out pretty well. I think a lot of people who wanted to check things out, they could. And, you know, people were pretty used to watching content online last year, right? This year, I feel like, you know, maybe people are getting a little bit tired of it and they want to be out in person, you know, within reason. Cinematheque still has a vaccine mandate. So you have to show proof of vaccination when you go to see movies at Cinematheque. So it'll be the same for our festival. That'll be the requirement. But, you know, obviously, if you can't come in person, you can always check things out online.
Is there a particular like short movie or a short film that you're like, yes, this is the one to look out for?
Well, our opening night film is Scarborough, which is just won the Canadian Screen Award for Best Motion Picture. It also won awards for Best Direction and acting award as well for one of the kids actually in the movie, 13-year-old Filipino kid actually named Liam, Liam Diaz, who is great in the movie. And the movie, if you've ever heard of it, it's based on a novel, a critically acclaimed novel by Catherine Hernandez. And it was part of the Canada Reads, you know, that CBC Canada Reads competition. It was part of that like a few years ago. And then from that came this movie, and then now it's this movie's award-winning as well, right? So, you know, it's going to be good. It's based on a great story. It's really about three families that from like underprivileged communities in Scarborough that are connected through a teacher and a specific kind of class. So it's really beautiful, and sometimes a little bit sad, obviously. There's some reality in there. At the end, there's hope. And so that's what makes it beautiful.
That's definitely something people should keep their eyes out for then. Why is it important to share these Asian-created stories and just having a festival to celebrate them?
a lot of the mainstream stuff. I mean, it's getting better. It's definitely getting better. But you know, representation in Asian stories aren't as common. You don't really see them as much in like popular culture. But they're out there, and there are lots of people trying to tell these stories and make movies and make documentaries about Asian experiences. And so having festivals to sort of help promote that and highlight that and give those films a place to screen and be a place to be seen, I think is important. And really it's the festivals that are doing that. And it's kind of a stepping stone, right? A lot of people, if they are making their first feature or second feature, you know, they're submitting it to festivals and hopefully with the goal of like generating some buzz for themselves and also learning every movie you make is you learn something else and you're building upon those skills that you've developed before. And I think the goal for a lot of people is obviously just to like make better projects, make better movies, elevate their craft, elevate their art, tell stories that are meaningful to them. And it doesn't always happen in a way that makes a lot of money, right? It's not commercially successful. It doesn't get picked up by a big studio or distributor and make a lot of money, but they're still worth telling because of the system that we have set up, you know. But then again, we have movies like Everything Everywhere All at Once, where, you know, it is a pretty, they did have a healthy budget, right? And they were able to do some pretty amazing things, even with the budget that they had, because even though it may not have been like a Marvel movie for sure, it definitely wasn't that high of a budget, but they were able to do some pretty amazing things with clever editing and just like clever special effects work. When you see the movie, you'll know what I mean. It's quite the feat.
There's so much we can learn from different cultures' storytelling. A big criticism I have of a lot of Western films right now in terms of like action is the amount of cutting. Scene, 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 scene. Whereas, at least in like China with some of their like kung fu movies or like movies that Jackie Chan did, just staying on the shot, following with the movement. And I think there's a lot to be learned from different, you know, cinematography approaches, different videography and just storytelling.
There's lots to be learned from watching stories of different people. Like, I always love a variety. I never watch the same movies over and over again, right? Like, who does that? that'd be ridiculous because you get bored so quickly. Partially it's also to expose people to that. If you don't go to a festival, where else are you going to watch these types of films, right? Like, they don't show them on Netflix or they don't show them on television or sometimes in the theater. If you go, you don't really see too many of these types of.
Yeah, it's not trending on social media.
Right, right. So our job is to sort of like try to find, our job as programmers and as curators of festivals is to try to sort through films and find those that are, you know, deserving of more praise and more exposure than they're getting.
Where can people go to find out more information and where can they get tickets for this?
Well, our website is live now. It's fascination.ca. That's fascination.ca. And through there, you should be able to find links to the box office or to buy tickets for individual programs. It lists everything there. We've got some workshops and discussion panels as well that are available, but those will be free and you can check those out through our social media pages, our Facebook page and our YouTube channel. They'll be streaming to those on the day live. So it's kind of exciting. So feel free to follow us there. We've also got a Twitter and an Instagram that you can follow as well. So we're kind of trying to hit all the marks. We might even start a TikTok when the festival comes around, just because, you know, we know a lot of people are on TikTok now, and those little short videos are always a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, great to grab attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Developing the program for this year, kind of like the live and virtual models combined. Are there things that you learned that you're going to be applying to the festival moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bit of a learning curve when it comes to doing both a multi-city festival as well, right? So it's been a lot of work to get everything organized. When it comes to like learning about things, I think that we're learning now in the process of organizing all this, sort of like what the tools are, right? What the tools are and how to be efficient with our work. And how best to put everything together and make it, you know, accessible to the public. Yeah. So I don't know if I would say I have anything major that I would change for the future. I would just be very realistic with the expectations of our work and our resources. It takes a lot of hours and people to put something like this together. And so I'm super grateful. We've got a fantastic group of volunteer organizers. We're all volunteers, you know, putting this on. And so devoting a lot of time and effort to it. There's some people who obviously like contractors that kind of are paid for specific things, but most of the organizers themselves are volunteers. And so, yeah, it's just about making that work and then making it so that people aren't overwhelmed because people are always also juggling other jobs and families and other life obligations. And so that's all part of it, right? From an organizer perspective.
So when does the Fascination Film Festival officially take place?
Opening night is Friday, May 13th. We have programming on the 13th, 14th, and 15th. On Thursday, May 12th, we have a special free public screening. We're going to be doing a movie in Old Market Square, just for anybody who wants to come by and check it out. It's part of the festival, but not an official part of the festival.
It's just an add-on.
Yeah, exactly. Just something nice to do for the community, you know?
Want to hear more stories and music from amazing people across Canada? Check out U Radio by U Multicultural. Listen in at u-channel.ca. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.